Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist, with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Musi Xavier about her contemporary novel, These Letters End in Tears. Xavier is a Cameroonian fiction writer based in the UK. Her debut won the 2021 Pontus and JJ Baller Emerging Writers Prize. In this episode, we discuss how she was inspired by a courageous gay couple in Cameroon who stayed together despite the laws forbidding their love, the challenges of using second person, and why Xavier made the tough decision to leave and relocate for her safety and her career. But before we hear that, here's Xavier with an excerpt from These Letters End in Tears.
I breathe again when he shifts his gaze and walks to the shack where a woman is roasting fish. Around her are sleek, well-dressed men, seated three per table, inside a cloud of smoke from her grill. A skeletal dog with a swarm of flies above its head is rooting through the remains of fish and buffalo in a waste bin nearby. The whole street smells of fish, a scent I learned to hate at a young age. There was something deeply troubling about witnessing my mother disembowel a fish in her kitchen sink and then seeing it on my plate shortly after. I would start thinking of the fish as a person, imagining myself as a cannibal and begging forgiveness from the fish gods. In the end, I just couldn't eat it. It's the same thing with a chicken. My dad would chop off its head in front of me like it was the most natural thing in the world and say, "Help me remove the feathers, Besem." When the chicken was as smooth as a baby's bottom, he would make a small incision in its tummy and yank out the innards. Later at dinner, licking chicken grease off his fingers, he would ask me why I wasn't eating. We killed it. It was so little and innocent, and we killed it. My arms would be folded defiantly across my small chest, glaring at Dad and at the pieces of meat on my plate. "I will beat you with a cane if you don't start eating now." My dad could make me do pretty much anything just by mentioning a cane or picking up his slipper to wag at me. After dinner, I would go to bed imagining the chicken was a well-loved princess and that the chicken kingdom led by her dad, the chicken king, was out looking for the lost princess. I was certain at that age that day would come for Dad and me. This battle over slaughtering animals happened at least twice a month until I moved away to boarding school.
Hi, Xavier. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you on with me today to discuss your debut novel, These Letters End in Tears.
Thank you so much for having me, Chloe. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's an exciting time for you around your publication. That's why I'd love for you to tell my listeners what These Letters End in Tears is about.
These Letters End in Tears is literary fiction about forbidden love and what it means to be gay in a country like Cameroon where homosexuality is outlawed. It's a story about two women, Besem and Fatima. One's Muslim, the other one is Christian. They met when they were young, fell madly in love, and had this intense affair in secret. But when Fatima's brother, who is a staunch Muslim, when he finds out about the affair, he intervenes and Fatima goes missing. So the book follows Besson 13 years later, who is now a university professor in Cameroon, as she searches to uncover what happened to Fatima, the woman she loved in her youth.
Yeah, it's a really heart-wrenching story, and I know one that will make people be absolutely hooked on the love story. Can you remember when the novel idea first came to you? What was your kind of starting point?
These letters ending pieces inspired by so many things. But the main inspiration behind the book is this lesbian couple I knew when I was young. I'm not going to say who for obvious reasons. You can't be openly gay in Cameroon. So the only reason why I knew about this couple was because someone had outed them. And I remember it was such a big scandal. It was all anyone could talk about. And the priest was called in to pray for them. There were family interventions. I think the police was involved. What really inspires me about this couple is that even after, like, Cameroon is probably one of the worst places in the world where you can be gay. What really inspires me about this couple is that even after going through everything that they went through, they still found a way to stay together. They are still together as we speak. And I'm a hopeless romantic. I am one of those people who I believe that there's someone out there made just for me. I haven't found them yet, but I know that they are out there. And I know that sounds delusional, but it's okay. I wanted to paint the picture of love so powerful that it can overcome anything. And I was really inspired by their courage and love for each other.
Absolutely, and that completely comes through. I'm a hopeless romantic as well, so I'm with you on that one. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you created the characters, particularly Besson, because it's her story that we follow. Where did she start in terms of, I guess, your preparation for the novel? Did you kind of have a picture in mind of what she would be like from the beginning?
For me, when I'm creating characters, I'm a pantser. I don't really plot. Most of my characters, my plot, I discover as I'm writing. Besson's character, compulsory heterosexuality is very common in Cameroon. When a woman comes of age, she starts getting all these questions. When are you going to get married? So there's a lot of pressure on women to get married in Cameroon. And I have seen a lot of people get into like situations, like unions that are not right for them. Like you can't really blame them sometimes. People just want to, do that and have peace of mind. So Besson's character was created with this aspect in mind. She's physically very attractive. She is smart. She's accomplished and she's young. And she has managed to stand her ground in the face of this pressure. So, like she said, if the person is not right for me, I'm not going to do it. So I think she's strong-willed in that way. She's also I wanted to create somebody who she's also very loyal. You can see that in the way she stays loyal to Fatima through the years and in her relationship with her best friend Jamal. Besson can also be very annoying in the sense that she's judgmental. She's your typical African auntie, always in your ear, telling you that your skirt is too short, you're getting fat. I remember hating my aunties for this growing up. I am an African auntie now. I hope I'm the cool type. Besson is she's not perfect. Like she has a lot of great characteristics, but she's not perfect. She's a functioning alcoholic. And it's something that she struggles with. I wanted readers to see this very strong-willed woman who has this weakness, something that she has no control over. And the reason I give Besson this problem is because alcoholism is prevalent in Cameroon in both men and women. So I wanted to like explore that. Besson's life, if you look at her life, it's actually very sad because she lives. She's living in constant fear of people finding out about her sexuality and how it will affect her reputation. You can see in the book how it has affected her relationship with her family, so she's very cautious about that, which is
Yeah, and
things I had in mind trying to create her character.
and I guess she lives in this hope and these memories of Fatima, and that kind of pulls her through, and it pulls us through the story, and it hinges on you creating this love story. And I know, as you said, you're a hopeless romantic. So what was it like for you to kind of let your imagination run wild and create this kind of beautiful love story? But obviously it's a when they're in their own little world and they're in their bubble, it's gorgeous, but obviously the outside world interferes with that. But did you enjoy kind of developing that love story between the two of them?
Oh, absolutely. I did. I the word I would use to describe the love between Bessette and Fatima is intense, very intense. And I think most of us remember that feeling of first love, how simplistic it was, how all-consuming can be. And it's the only thing you can think of, and nothing else matters. When you live in this bubble, you want to grow old together, you want to get married and grow old together. So, and I think that first love influences our future relationships. So I really enjoy developing the feelings for each other because I was able to go back to a period of my life when things were so much more simpler. Adult love can be very complicated and tiring. So it was really fun to go back there and relieve those feelings. Yes, it was an enjoyable experience for me.
Obviously, you mentioned that being gay in Cameroon is illegal, and it's a difficult topic to write about when you know that that's the culture in your country. Were you nervous or fearful at all about writing about a same-sex couple because of the consequences in Cameroon? Obviously it's a important for you, a important subject for you, obviously, otherwise you wouldn't have written it. But how did you feel approaching that topic?
When I started writing this book, I mean, it was just something on my computer. I wasn't too worried about it. It's when I got the book deal that it became like, I was like, oh my God, this is now real. People are going to read about this. Like my book is pro-gay, which is not allowed in Cameroon. In my book, I also make some comments about the president and his government. In that in Cameroon is considered insulting the president. You're not allowed to do that. And I can't tell you how many activists, how many journalists, how many writers have been sent to jail for speaking out like about this injustice in the country. So when I got the book deal, I was concerned, I was afraid. And I remember having a conversation with my agent, Pontus literary agency, and my publisher Catapult in the US. I expressed my concerns, and I remember my mentor, British author J.J. Bowler, the author of The Selfless Act of Freedom. I remember he said to me, Xavier, you have to think very carefully about this if you're concerned for your safety. And he told me that you should know there is always the option of publishing under a pseudonym. I really appreciate like him telling me that because like if you ask me what was the thing that I struggled with the most in my publishing journey, on my publishing journey, I would say that it was deciding whether to publish under my name or under a pseudonym. On the one hand, I love my country, even with the way that it is. I have family there and friends. I was reluctant to leave behind. I had spent all those years building a life for myself just to pack up everything and start over in a new country. It's a really scary thing. But on the other hand, I leaving Cameroon meant my safety was insured, which is the most important thing. And Relocating to Europe also meant that I would grow as a writer because there are so many opportunities here. And to be honest with you, being artistic in nature and living in a place like Cameroon can feel very suffocating. So yes, leaving mind, I could finally break. But even when all of these thoughts were going through my mind, I still like I did not have a visa. I was sure if I was going to leave Cameroon or not. So it all depended on like if I was going to get a visa or not. And I think I'm glad I got the visa on time, but if I had not gotten the visa, I think I would have published under a pseudonym. And it was also very important for me to tell this story because I feel like what is happening in Cameroon currently, I feel like people need to speak out more about it. I'm not the first one to speak out. I'm not going to be the last, but I feel like if we make enough noise, maybe change will come. That's what I was hoping for by telling this story.
Yeah, it's I said to you before we started recording, I think it's so brave and such a scary thing to move country anyway, but to do it for those reasons, it must be just I feel you're incredibly courageous as a person and starting your life again. But like you say, it must be nice and liberating in some ways to be in a country where you can be your kind of creative self and have that freedom to write what you want and do what you want.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the way your novel is structured, because at the beginning, well, actually the whole way through, the novel is in letter form, and Bassem is writing to Fatima. It's always you and describing you. What was your thinking behind that choice? What did you always have it in mind that you were going to write them as letters?
I personally love letters a lot. I think letters were very, very popular when I was in secondary school, my formative years. People don't do that anymore, which is, and I think that letters are romantic in a way that modern ways of communication are not. Maybe that's just me, I don't know. And these letters ending here is set in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that was like the primary means of communication back then. So I felt it would be more authentic if that was the means that Bessem was using to communicate with Fatima, because that is what she's doing through her letters, communicating her longing, her worry, like, where are you? And I felt it felt more natural to do it that way. And I knew that I was going to tell the story through letters from the very beginning. And the first that the half of the first draft was written that way in letter form. But I found it harder and harder to do because the story in a way is investigative. There are moments of suspense, excitement, surprise, anticipation. I found it very hard to do that with the direct addresses to Fatima. That's why I decided to switch to Bessem's perspective. Sharing a story with someone in person or in letter form is very different from the way we do it in books. There are certain things that you cannot do with letters. What I did was I started out with just the letters. I found it hard to continue telling the story that way. And then I said, okay, let me use even numbers. The first two chapters were letters, the second, like the chapter three and four, was Bessem's perspective. And I did that all the way to the end. And it did not work. It felt too mechanical, yeah, to me. So I went back and I separated the letters from Bessem's perspective. And I said, okay, this time I'm just going to follow my instinct. So I just started reading the letters like from chapter one, chapter two. And like when I felt like I've had enough of the letters. When I felt like, okay, now I'm getting bored of the letters, I brought in Bassem's perspective. And from there, like if I felt I've had enough of her story, and then I brought in the letters, and I knew I had to be very clever how I went about that. So it was just, and actually, this is one of the things that I struggled with the most in, say, creating, like crafting my story, because I had to be very clever how I went about marrying the two voices together in a way that would make sense to the writer. In the end, I just did what felt natural to me. That's, I think that's how I approached it, yes.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You seem like quite an instinctive writer. You say you don't really plan much either. It kind of,
No, I don't.
it
I don't. I don't. And the reason why I don't plan most of my writing is because I get bored easily.
happens.
It's the same way, not just in writing, but in life.
Okay.
I like to discover my story the same way that the reader does. Yes.
Because the other thing that I thought was really interesting is that the way you explore Bessem and Fatima's relationship is in a non-chronological way. So very early on, we see their first meeting, but then we also learn kind of their final tragic end, I guess, to their relationship. And you did you kind of think about how you could tell the trajectory of their relationship, or did was that another thing that you just kind of played around with and decided which sounded best?
That's another thing that I discovered as I was writing. Honestly, I didn't plan that, and I have this writing buddy I was working with at the time when I was writing the story, and oh, I can't answer this question without spoiling, giving spoilers. So
No, we know on spoilers. Okay, so we'll dodge that bit, but we've established that you kind of Again, it was another instinctive feeling that just felt right. Let's talk a little bit more about how you write then. I'd love to hear kind of what's your general kind of writing, best writing routine? Like, do you write with music? Do you write in silence? Do you like to write first thing in the morning? What's your kind of writing routine like?
Many writers I talk to, they tell me I write in a coffee shop, I write in a park, I write somewhere with beautiful scenery, which I think is very cool. It sounds very fancy. But I write in bed, only in bed. That's why my bed is, but yeah, that my bed is the most comfortable place in the world. And the reason why I do that is because my feet get cold really easily. When I get out of bed, my feet get cold. And when my feet are cold, I can't think creatively. So yeah, when I wake up in the morning, the first 4 hours, of course, I have to like have a cup of coffee. The first 4 hours I write, and then I get out of bed and I continue my day. I don't write every day though, but I try to do 4 hours every day. And I don't do music because it distracts me. And I can't write where, like in a place where people are moving about. I like it. I like my environment very still and quiet. Yeah, that's how I can focus.
I'm exactly the same as you. I could not write in a cafe because I would just be listening to everyone's conversations and probably
I
writing those
know.
down as well. I even sometimes at home, I will put on like if it's a particularly noisy day in the house, I'll put on like a white noise soundtrack to kind of block out all the sound. It's the only way my brain works with just pure silence. But I love the idea of you writing in bed. Do you write on your laptop in bed, or do you write by hand straight on the keys?
Oh, I read on my laptop. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like a nice cozy setup.
It's very cozy. I've tried other things, and this is the only thing that works for me. People find it strange.
Well, it works for you. Tell us a
Yeah.
bit more, Xavier, about your kind of your writing journey, I guess, from when you first started enjoying writing. Were you someone who has always written? Were you writing stories as a child? What's your kind of writing life been like?
I've always wanted to be a writer, and I wrote my first romance novella when I was 13. It was handwritten and published at my school. And this was after I think I read Oliver Twist when I was 11 years old, and I think Dickens. He introduced me to literature, and that is like after reading him, that's when I started writing. And I remember trying to imitate his writing style, which was very strange. Imagine, like, Dickens was a European man writing about his experience as a European man. Imagine me, an African child in Africa, trying to write like him. So it was really, but I eventually found my voice. So, most writers I speak to, they start with short form. I skipped that and I went straight to long form. So I've been writing, I wrote like maybe two or three novels before I was 20 years old. And I read everything, so I write everything. I write romance, I write horror, I write just
Oh,
anything I feel
amazing.
like doing. Yeah, so. And most of what I was writing was handwritten because, like, I didn't have like a laptop or access to a computer back then. Yes, I've self-published a young adult fiction novel. Yes, and yeah.
Wow, okay. So these handwritten novels, do you still have them now somewhere?
Last I heard, I think those books are with my younger sisters because, like, when I brought them home, because I went to a different boarding school. So when I brought them home, they took the books to their own boarding school, and the students were reading it there. So, like, I don't know if it's still with them or if it's the books are lost. I think I'll have to call and ask if they still have. Yes.
Yeah, maybe one day you can type them up again and see whether there's some gold in there that you can publish now as an adult.
I know. I actually have like two completed novels just sitting on my laptop.
Okay.
Yeah. I just,
Same genre or different genre?
one is horror, one is literary fiction. But
Okay.
yeah, I think in the it's something I'll revisit in the future. Yes.
So is it so what's so your kind of your interest in different genres, is it because one day you wake up and you're feeling in a particular mood or something you've read that inspires you to write a different genre?
It's usually something I've read, a movie, or watched. Yeah, that's what inspires me. Yeah, I mean,
I see.
my brain just goes in that way.
And
I don't think.
you're quite a fast writer because it sounds like you've written a lot.
I think it's because I started with long form from an early age. Yeah, so I've had a lot of practice with that. Yeah.
So when in 2021 you won the contest and the JJ Bullar Emerging Writers Prize, and I wondered what kind of impact that had on your career, because until that point you were just kind of having fun with writing and writing just as a hobby. But then you won those prizes, so you won that prize. How did that change things for you?
I feel like in order for you to understand how much winning the Poundas and JJ Bullar Prize has impacted me, you have to like first of all understand how difficult it can be for something like that to happen to someone from Cameroon. The publishing industry in Cameroon is still very young. We have publishers in Cameroon, big publishers, but they mostly publish textbooks for schools because there's a market for that. So they know, like here in Europe, where you write a good book, you send it to a publisher and you get published. They don't really do that because there's no money in it for them. Because there's a saying in Cameroon that if you want to hide something from a Cameroonian, hide it in a book. The reading culture is very poor. So I feel that is why they don't really publish authors like that. But in recent years, I've seen a lot of like independent publishers popping up online and encouraging young writers to submit manuscripts. I think that is a good step. That's a step in the right direction. Back when I completed my YA fiction novel, Fabiola, like that option was not available to me. Most writers in Cameroon, and I know so many of them, what we do is like, let me use myself as an example. When I finished writing my YA novel, I edited it myself with the help of like family and friends, and I paid for the I approached the printer. I paid for the cost of public printing because they print, they don't publish you. That just they print for you, you pay upfront. You collect your books, and then I went back. I organized a book launch and I marketed my book. It was difficult, and I really don't advise that for any writer. I mean, like, if it's the only option you have, you can do that, but it's difficult. I feel like writers can spend that time creating more work instead of doing all that. So winning the Poynters and JJ Bullar Prize has really impacted my life in so many ways, because just being Cameroonian, just being Africans in general, it's very difficult to publish your work, say here in Europe or in America. And for me personally, because the publishing industry now, not just in Cameroon, is still very, it's still growing. Hopefully soon things will change for the better. But personally, I've always wanted to publish my work here in the West. This is where the big publishers are. This is where the market is. Like, if you want to succeed as a writer, I feel like this is where you should do it. I don't know about other people. And I remember in my circle of writer friends back then, we used to say that in order for an African writer to be recognized here in the West, you have to have lived here or say attended a fancy creative writing school, yeah, in order to get noticed. So even though I wanted an agent, I wanted to book deal, I wanted to publish in Europe and America, I knew that the chances were really slim for me. Yeah. So in 2020, this is when I started writing these letters ending PS, my debut novel. A friend sent me a link, and it was for the Poynter and JJ Bowler Prize for Emerging Writers. It was open to everyone around the world, and we were required to send in the first three chapters of an unfinished novel and like a full synopsis. The prize was a cash prize, representation from the Poynter Literary Agency, and mentorship from JJ Bowler while you like worked on finishing your manuscript. I applied because back then I applied for everything. Yeah, and I forgot about it because like what were my chances of winning? It was impossible. In June that same year, I received news that I had won, which is
Amazing.
yes, I
So
still have.
good.
I know it was unbelievable. Actually, I co-won with another Indian writer, Bhavika Govil. Her debut novel comes out soon. So yeah, just like that, I went from having very little hope to having nearly everything I'd ever dreamt of.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, I know. And just in like from July, I from that time, I think June, July, by December, I had finished the first draft. Yeah, which was some people tell me that it's very fast. And the reason why I was able to do this was because when I started writing, my agent Maria, she told me that Xavier, I don't mean to pressure you or anything, but if you can finish this book by December, January, the beginning of the year is usually like a very good time to sell books to publishers. Yes, yeah, she was very insistent that I'm not trying to
Not trying
pressure
to push
you,
you,
but just
but
yeah, keep this in mind. So I think I was very motivated. That's why I finished the book so quickly. By December that same year, 2020, I had finished with like, and while I was writing, I was having the with my co the co-winner, we were having mentorship sessions with JJ Bola, which really also helped a lot with the completion of the book. So January next year, January 2021, my agent Maria, she sent the book out in submission, and you will not even believe it. Just over 1 week, I got the book deal, and it was a pre-em. So it was unbelievable. Even now, I don't think I've sat down to digest everything that has happened. Yeah, and shortly after that, rights were sold to the UK, and translation rights into Dutch, Danish, Italian. So it's all happening very fast. Yeah, the Poynter and JJ Bowler Prize for Emerging Writers has really helped my career a lot.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
incredible. And it's so amazing to not only get the mentorship, but to get an agent, and to also nice to get a bit of money as well, and get all those things together.
I
It's like the
know.
full package, isn't it? And I always, every time I speak to someone on this podcast who's won a prize or even been shortlisted or longlisted, I say, make sure if you're a writer who wants to get somewhere, enter those prizes, enter those competitions, as many as you can, because one day one judge might read your work and think, this is it, this is a winner, and your
Yeah.
life can change, because we see it all the time. And it's such a brilliant thing. Obviously that was such an amazing moment and a bit of a whirlwind for you to go from just when entering a prize and being hopeful to now having your book published and translated and being sold all over the world. What's it been like then? How would you describe the kind of publishing experience to people who maybe are just about to embark on it themselves? Maybe they're just about to have their first book published. Do you have any advice or tips from anyone that's maybe worried or excited? How would you describe that kind of I guess about 2 years, maybe 18 months of anticipation in preparation for your book to be published.
I'll say that to any writer who is like about to get their book published, you have already done the hardest part, which is to complete the manuscript. I'm not saying that that is where the work ends, because there's still a lot of work there's still a lot of work to be done. I know, like, I only found out about the business side of writing after I had gotten my book deal, and then I was now being introduced to, like, you have to sell your book when you write it. A lot of newbie writers don't know that, so there's still a lot to do. But and I know that most writers are introverted, so the idea of having to go out there and like present your book and like convince people to buy it can be very scary. But I just want to say that if I could do it, you can do it. Just breathe. You've done the hardest part.
And I think although a lot of us are introverted, I would count myself as one too, but talking about your work to people who are interested, who are readers, who love books, is so much fun because people are sitting there listening to you because they can't wait to read your book, and that's the nicest feeling possible. And I think even if you're nervous about that, don't be nervous. It's the best part. I would say so anyway.
The beginning is very scary, but like the more you do it, you really feel that.
Yeah, definitely. So Xavier, really, really want to know what's next for you. What are you writing at the moment?
I'm working on a new book, because I don't plot, it's still I'm not
It's
I'm not
unraveling at the moment.
I'm not really sure, but what I do know is that is literary fiction about an African immigrant woman trying to find her way in England. It's
Not
going
autobiographical then, not quite.
not quite. It's not going to go the way you think, and
Okay, interesting.
there you go. Yeah, so
Yeah.
there's a twist there somewhere. Again, I'm finding out as
Yeah,
I'm
you're finding out as you
writing.
go. Amazing. Oh, well, I'm so excited, but I want to wish you all the best for These Letters End in Tears. And as I said, it's a brave undertaking, particularly when you know how your country might react. But it's a wonderful love story, and I think people will really be rooting for your characters and enjoy reading about their experiences in Cameroon. But thank you, Xavier, so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me, Terry. It's my pleasure.
That was Mercy Xavier talking about her contemporary novel, These Letters End in Tears, which is out now and available to buy. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors, and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it would be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.
budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.